What kind of work did you do then when you were a lad? What were the first sort of jobs that you did when you were, you know, 15, 16, 17?
Well, when I started with electricians, we used to repair cables. When they come out of it and they'd been cut, you'd got to fasten them all up, tape them up and put them in a heater so it all moulded into cable again. Yeah, and then when I went into the fitting shop, I used to be drilling plates and making things. And one thing I made, I've still got, I made a rig spanner made out of locomotive spring plates. And I've still got it in there, in that garage. I was only 15, well, I'd be 16 by the time I made it, drilled it all out and filed it and made it fit hexagon, you know, nuts.
And was that like a test piece, that a learning piece?
Well, it probably, well, but not really. Just did it on my own. Because this fella who worked for me, Charlie Abishaw, he was a great bloke, he? He could have been an engineer, but he didn't want that sort of job. He didn't want responsibility of being an engineer, but he was as good as anybody.
And he was just one of the other fitters?
He was just foreman fitter, yeah.
What did they use electricity down the pit for? Just explain that for me.
Well, they used it for lighting, not down on the face, but also machines, driving machines. Some of them, years ago, they were air machines, but then they changed over to electric.
And these machines were what? The
coal cutters? Yes, coal cutters, yeah.
You had to have quite a lot of electricity down the pit then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and full-time fellas with them, you know, looking after jobs.
And where did it come from? Did you generate your own at the pit?
Yeah, they did. They did. They generated their own.
That was at the pit top or the pit bottom?
Well, it was pit top. Powerhouse, we used to call it. I've been in there and done that job in power. I've done all jobs up pit top. And telephone exchange were in there. There were everything.
And was the engine in the powerhouse, was that a steam engine or a diesel?
No, it was a steam engine. Steam. Well, the two or three, one for compressors, for air, for work it pit tops, doors, air doors and all this, you know. AEG, they call this machine. I once helped a German. It was a German firm. One bank holiday, they wanted it reblading, this machine. And he come with this German. He fell out. And he wouldn't tell us what we to do, you know, to do the job. So we had to carry on as best we could until we were stuck anyway. Then he come round and somebody else told him, you know, that what he had to do. Anyway, we got away with it.
Who'd he fallen out with? I don't understand.
He'd fallen out with engineer, because he thought he wasn't doing it, whether they thought he was doing it quick enough or whatever, you know. Oh, he fell out with engineer. So then he wouldn't tell us what to do. So that would slow it job down more.
Just to explain this difference between the surface fitters and the underground fitters, what difference was there in the kind of work that you did?
We looked after all surface machinery and they looked after the underground machinery, which were coal cutters and, well, compressors and whatever would outpit.
But there was a bit of an overlap in the sense that sometimes you had to go down the pit.
We had to go look after pumps. We had to go down service pumps. We had to go down and change brakes on haulages. They didn't do that. It was our job, looking after maintaining them. But surface, we did everything on surface. We had to go, if washer broke down, we had to go see to that. We had to go on screens and repair them all over. Fan house, we had to go and do that.
Tell me a bit more about the other stuff on the surface. You've mentioned the screens and the washer. Just for somebody who
doesn't
know it, just explain how that... You know, you were talking about tipping the tubs into
right,
the tippler.
Right, OK. Then
so tell me what...
You're coming out at... Coal's coming out. You're coming past this weighbridge, check way, into tippler, like I've told you, then onto conveyor belts, into railway wagons, down to canal side, into boats. Tom Puddings, they called them. And the rest of it that wanted washing and that used to go up and into a bunker, and then from bunker, it go up into washer. then come up conveyor belt into washer, then come out again and be riddled again. So it fell into bunkers where wagons go underneath to fill up when they come for coal.
So some of the coal, when it came out of the pit, went straight into railway wagons.
Yeah.
When it came off the screens.
Yeah. Big pieces went straight into railway wagons.
So, but all the coal went into the screens first?
Yes.
And it was sorted into the different sizes?
Yeah. Yes, all tipped in there. Big lumps like this, or bigger, used to go straight into wagons. Small stuff went through onto washer and were washed and then come out underneath washer into wagons or lorries that come for pick it up.
What did the people who worked on the screens have to do?
Well, like I've said, they're there, stood outside at conveyor belt, either side, picking all slates out and throwing them away. And then that goes on to another conveyor into bunker where aerial flight takes it all over canal side and dips it in them stacks that's down at Fleet.
What kind of people worked on the surface then?
There were some fellas on screens that were a bit, like from homes, in fact. There were two brothers, Arnett brothers, and they were always there. And Freddie Arnett, little Freddie, he used to come on a Sunday morning just to see locomotive being repaired in shed. Come in his long coat and his cap and scarf round, and he used to stand there looking and watching. He couldn't say much at all.
Do you remember the story about him getting lost?
Lost in Fleet, in filter beds, yes. Yeah, they were up to his neck in it, I think.
There was a big search.
Aye, there were, aye. Hey, tell anybody else that had been killed, that they died, I'm sure. There's a bit, well, placed, and it was cold weather as well, you know. Wasn't it summer? But you got down there, and you know where we go past filter beds, don't we? Mm. When we go down to Marina there. Yeah, aye, little friend. And George Arnett, his brother, they lived with the sister. She used to send him up to Midland with two jugs for beer, and when he'd get beer he wouldn't go back. He lived back at Picture House down at Eshels. He wouldn't go back home. He used to walk on up Main Road, up North Lane and round Green Lee and back down to his house with his two jugs of beer. And one day coming up North Lane, saw two dogs fighting. And he shouted, he banged jugs together, lost a lot, smashed them. Aye, he did. Because there was a fella across the road in North Lane, Alfie Nolan, they called him. George used to stand till he come to the door when he were in, just to wave to him. And that's about where dogs were fighting.
How did you get on with the management?
Oh, I got on all right with them, yeah. Sometimes it's... We disagreed, but no, not really. I were also okay with them.
Can you remember the strikes that happened and what they were about?
Well, the Winder strike, that's what one of them. And beauty about that, we used to go. We couldn't go into the pit yard. But all we stood at Winding House was straight opposite there. Number one Winder. And he was stood there at Winder. And we were on strike, and they were supposed to be on strike, and we stood there like spare parts. Aye.
Do you know what they were striking for?
Not really, I can't remember now. I know it was Winder strike.
Because there were quite a few strikes, I think.
Oh, there were, yes. There were 2 or 3 day strikes and all like that. We had Bob Wilkinson as union representative, and they tried to get rid of him. Management. They said when he once went in that pit, they searched him and found some matches in his pocket, which weren't true, because they didn't like him. Like I say, we didn't have much to do with him because he was underground more, but he was still representative for union against management.
What were labour relations like then, generally speaking?
They were good. They used to help one another. That was the main thing, you know. If you were in trouble or all like that at work, they'd help you and whatever. Good workforce, really, together. They're all sort of happy in their own way.
Did you have much to do with the manager Billy Williams, who was there for most of the early part of your career?
No, I didn't have a lot to do with him, but the built between shop, fitting shop, and lamp room, there were a big gap. So they make that into stores, right? They'd built stores, put top on, so we had to go and put a steel door on inside door that led into fitting shop. So we're doing that. So what did we do? We got a ball out, didn't we? Play football, they did it lovely. Kick it ball about. Who walks by main door? Billy Williams. So he never said that. So my dad asked me next day, he says, if you see Mr. Williams, we'll ask him if we can have a bag of firewood. He's taken up with coals. So I said, I'll see him. He walks by. So I saw him going by. Oh, Mr. Williams. My dad says, he'd like a bag of wood with his load of coal, if you don't mind. He says, aye. Don't let me catch your leg in football again. He says, oh, you're up road. It's seen us, but he waited his opportunity to tell us. But when I won that clock, it was Yorkshire Junior Billy Championship. They put a presentation on for us at Harold Hall, and Billy Williams come and he made speech, you know, whatever. Yeah, I could get on with him.
Tell me what you did in your spare time.
I played football, I played billiards and snooker, played cricket, played tors. You know what tors are?
Marbles.
Marbles, tors. We used to call them tors. And, I spent a lot of time playing football in that field, Nate Institute, because school gardens were there, and we used to use them as goals, because there was a big iron fencing, and we could kick ball up again, it would go at gardens, so we were OK. But I spent a lot of time at Alton Institute. Oh, then on a night we'd go, on a weekend we'd go to Rothwell dancing. I couldn't dance, but we used to go. We'd walk on Rothwell Lane on a Sunday, all dressed up. And
tell me more about the billiards.
Well, there again, how that started. My mum and dad were going to take my sisters. Well, they did take them to pictures, and I didn't want to go. So I said, no, I don't want to go to pictures. I was only, 13. And my mum, she used to do a bit with Labour Party things. And Fred Colson, what caretaker at Oakton Institute, where billiard tables were. So she went and asked him if I could come up and watch, sit and watch. I hadn't a clue about billiards at all. Anyway, so I went in, and I could go in again, and, you know, a few times. And then they said, we'll make you a probationary member if you want, because I wasn't old enough yet to be 16. So they made me a probationary member, and that was it. Then I started playing, and, well, every night I would go in. And Saturday mornings, you started on number 4 table. When you got better, you went on number 3, number 2, and number 1. Number 1 table were only for billiards. They didn't play snooker on there. I don't know why. All these old fellas used to play on there at billiards, because billiards were top-class name game. So that's where I come from there.
And you went on to be a bit of a champion, yeah?
Yeah, you might say. I was 11 times Leeds champion. I were 8 times Yorkshire champion, and I played in All England final in 91 when I was 60. It was like played at Wembley. For my Wembley were that ambition to get into All England billiard final. And I got beat. I got beat with a 20-year-old. But he's professional now. But I got invited to go and be coached by Leslie Driffield, who was world amateur billiard champion, and he asked me to go to his place at Pontefract, Underhill Hall. I said I'd think about it, but we'd done it with 2 kids then, and I couldn't afford time off to go, and I didn't have we had a car, but I couldn't go, so I lost my chance.
Well, your work, really, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah, well, work. Oh, yeah.
Hours.
Oh, well, a long time working, yeah.
So when you were playing at the Alton Institute, were you mainly playing against men who worked at the pit?
Yes. Yes, my dad told me that when he used to come home from pit, and then they'd go in Alton Institute before they went to work, if they'd want back shifts, you know. Yes. Oh, there were a lot of fellas from pit there. There were some young lads as well that worked in Leeds and all over the place.
Just for those who don't know, because people know about snooker and pool these days, but explain what billiards, just the basic rules of billiards.
Well, with billiards, you play with three balls, two whites and a red. And one of the whites has a spot on, so you can, that's called the spot white, so you know which is your ball. And then you break off. Then you score by potting red or going in off red or potting white or going in off white. But once you pot white, the white has to stop down at pocket. You can't have that back. And then you can play cannon and whatever.
So is it a more sophisticated game than snooker?
I'll just tell you what Mr. Driffield said, world champion. He said the difference in billiards and snooker is like chess and draughts. It's a more difficult game than snooker is billiards. And funnily enough, I had an old advertiser there. I took it to club last night and led a fella, this Arthur Gamble. He's writing a book about me. And it's in there, and headlines. It shows you me up at table playing. And it says, Dennis, 11 times champion. A full page in advertiser. I was first person to win Yorkshire title four times in a row. They'd done it three times, but nobody had done it four. Even Leslie Driffield didn't win it four times on trot.